Hello, my name is Dave Hitchcock. I'm a PhD student at the University of Warwick in my final year and a sessional teacher here. And I study vagrancy. I study the history of vagrancy in early modern England in the later 17th and early 18th centuries. And today what I'd like to do is speak for a little while about the interesting similarities and important differences between how homelessness and vagrancy were perceived in early modern England, in the period that I study, versus how they are seen today. And the reason I became interested in this in particular, this idea that there was a deep-seated relationship between how this same phenomenon has been seen over time, is because of the recent Occupy movements, which have protested in England, in the United States, and indeed around the world, and in the rather intriguing relationship those movements have with homeless people. And I'd like to start by reading a couple quotes that really got me thinking about this really troubling issue. So, an essay by Elena Schwartz at the Newer Inquiry caught my eye about a month ago, in which Schwartz looks at the settlement protests, the housing protests in Israel, and compares their rhetoric of the 99% to the emerging rhetoric of the Occupy movement. And Schwartz recounts how, as a participant in Occupy Oakland, she was proud to watch as members of her General Assembly, quote, burned a letter from the city that demanded, among other things, that homeless people be removed from our camp. But, says Schwartz, not every occupation was so supportive. And she's right. In an article for the New York Times, Adam Nagourney looked at all the different Occupy movements that had to deal with the presence of homeless people, and often not in a complimentary way. And The Guardian, too, has commented on this odd sort of perceptual gap in a movement that purports to represent 99% of all people who inhabit a country. The Guardian commentary in particular was very incisive. The author called the recent London Occupy movements sort of learning from our mistakes a very uncomfortable idea. We can't be this inclusive, they said. Too much time and energy is being wasted babysitting people when we should be working on ideas and outreach. And the article goes on to say that the fear is that the Occupy sites have lost direction and momentum as they increasingly come to resemble crisis shelters. Before the 30th of January eviction, over half of the 60-odd residents of the UBS building in the City of London had no alternative shelter, including young families with children, veterans suffering post-traumatic stress disorder, and people with disabilities. In other words, very vulnerable people. And interestingly, the Guardian commentator seems to believe that the Occupy movement is responding to pressure from outside the movement itself, particularly media pressure. In this case, they quote a Daily Mail summary from November of 2011, desecration, defecation, and Class A drugs was their summary. But the result of this is that homeless people, effectively modern-day vagrants, have been ejected from the only movement outside of charities for homelessness that purports to represent them politically. The homeless vote is certainly not courted. Homelessness is straightforwardly seen as a condition to be abated, to be a problem to be solved. And this is exactly how it was seen in early modern England. What's even more intriguing is that homelessness is very problematic to divide downwards, to divide into the little groups of people who end up homeless for whatever reason. People often feel very uncomfortable when they discover that, for example, veterans of wars are far more likely to end up sleeping rough on the streets. When, you know, one assumes that the modern sort of social welfare state would take care of those who go and fight on its behalf. And this is actually exactly like what happened, or what the perception was in early modern England as well. Legislation that defined who was and was not a vagrant in early modern England included almost 30 different subheadings that often bore little relationship to one another, but whom were classified as vagrants. And I should say here that the early modern definition of vagrancy is certainly different from our modern definition of homelessness. And so if you were looking for distinct changes, I think you could say there's a distinct reduction in the scope of the definition in modern times. To be homeless now, although it carries all sorts of unsavory connotations, is simply to be without an address, without a home to live in of your own. In the early modern period, vagrants could be any number of different things. Some professions more respectable than others, or more successful than others. All mobile peddlers and tinkers were liable to be labeled as vagrants. Fencers and bear wards and entertainers, minstrels, jugglers, persons pretending or to be gypsies, or actually gypsies, were all considered vagrants as well. And there was a certain xenophobic dimension as well, because the law included injunctions against wandering Scottish and Irish people. Historians have typically argued that vagrants in the early modern period, and this is actually a pan-European phenomenon now, tended to be identified or described using five essential characteristics, which we'll look at because I think they're important, because I think they remain in the modern characterization of homeless people. First and foremost, they were poor. There's really no such thing as a rich homeless person. Second, they were mobile, which is to say they moved around. Mobility was a defense against, in the early modern period, starvation or apprehension. Since vagrancy was a crime. Third, they were masterless or lawless. And what that meant was they were not employed by someone else. Modern-day parallels are not really sort of easily available. I would say here you're thinking of people who are on benefit but who do not seek work. That would be the sort of comparable ideological assertion to make. Fourth, they were idle. This is a huge overlap between the supposed refusal to work or to find work and labeling someone as a vagrant. In the early modern period, it is explicitly the primary cause, so contemporaries thought, of the phenomenon. Finally, vagrants were considered a danger to the social order. And vagrancy, as I mentioned, was illegal. It was a crime of status. And it behooves me to remind everyone that in the early modern period and beyond, and as Rowan Williams has recently argued, perhaps even today, there was an exclusionary definition of poverty. People who deserved help and people who did not deserve help. And vagrants were explicitly in that second category. in early modern England. They were to be punished, corrected, but they were not to be assisted. The statute that sort of the statutes that affected vagrants most profoundly most of them came from the reign of Queen Elizabeth. And punishments for vagrancy, especially if you committed the offense more than once, could involve whipping, being burned through the gristle of your ear, having the sign of a V burned onto one of your hands, or transportation across the ocean as an indentured servant once that system begins to make itself felt in the 17th century. It's a hazy definition that was employed to describe vagrants. However, almost all authorities were in agreement about the ways in which vagrancy should be dealt with and how it should be perceived. In the words of one assize justice from the 1630s, one Francis Harvey, the, quote, punishment of vagrants was all the charity that the law affordeth them. Not particularly generous. This view is shared, again, in very much in a pan-European sense. Martin Luther actually provided a preface warning against vagrants for a 1500s edition of the Book of Vagabonds and Beggars, the Liber Vagatorum. And what's really interesting about this is that Luther himself apparently experienced the sort of the seditious, deceptive characteristics of homeless people firsthand. And he writes about it in this preface. He writes, "I have myself of late years been cheated and befooled by such tramps and liars more than I wish to confess." And it's an odd conflation of the age and of the Reformation in particular, that homeless people actually absorb a lot of religious criticism, particularly in Protestant countries, from Catholic monks, mendicants, mobile religious people. And so when the monasteries are dissolved under Henry VIII in early modern England in the 16th century, one of the men sent to inspect them, to sort of value them and to describe what he saw in these monasteries, Richard Layton, was writing letters to Thomas Cromwell in which he was telling tales that were apparently well matched to the Canterbury Tales in their salacious detail of the sort of the peccadilloes of these inhabitants of these monasteries. So vagrants really don't get a chance to speak for themselves in the early modern period, at least not in the 16th and early 17th centuries, for sure. And the vagrants, or certainly the roguish characters that we would be most familiar with now, are not real. Moll Flanders, Oliver Twist, these characters certainly live lives on the brink of, or directly in, what we would consider to be the underworld of early modern England. But they, for all of their sort of pathos and purchase, are not real, and so they don't necessarily represent what it was actually like to be homeless in this period. So I'd like to share a story with you about one vagrant in particular, who I came across when I was doing research in the Warwickshire County Archives. He's not at all typical, but he's not at all atypical either. One of the interesting things about studying vagrancy is that you come across a bewildering variety of people, often very, very vulnerable people. And as my talk draws to a close, I'll talk about the intriguing parallels between between early modern vagrants and modern vagrants based on that vulnerability, because I think that is the biggest commonality between vagrancy then and now. So I'd like to talk about a vagrant by the name of Edward Price. Edward Price was apprehended in Warwickshire and interviewed on July 11th, 1728 by William Bromley, an old justice of the peace in Warwickshire, in Baggington, who is actually a former Speaker of the House, Parliament. He's the William Bromley of the early 18th century Tory ministry. Edward Price and his wife had recently given birth to a male child, and the Prices and their young son had been apprehended probably in Warwick Town, though the judicial journal which Bromley kept does not specify where they were found. What it does tell us is that Price was a very interesting fellow. He was commonly, Bromley says, known by the name of the Fire Eater, and that he was a vagrant who wandered about the country showing tricks of dexterity or sleight of hand. So Price was an entertainer, probably without a license, probably on circuit from fair to fair, eking out a haphazard existence, entertaining audiences for money, busking or begging as was required. Apparently Price once served out a 7-year apprenticeship to a blacksmith in Wolverhampton, which is where Bromley eventually ordered he and his wife and his young son to return. What's even more interesting is that Bromley was informed by Price's wife that they had been genuinely married, but they had been married in Northampton, which means that he had traveled at least 46 kilometers from Wolverhampton to Coventry, or to Warwick, and had clearly traveled elsewhere on several occasions. This is a man in an age before easily affordable fast travel who had traveled on foot an immense distance to make some kind of living. What's perhaps, most instructive about this story of Edward Price is that Bromley's chief interest, the justice's chief interest in this case, is determining where Price and his family should be sent, which parish of settlement they should inhabit, and who should bear their charge. Early modern England by this period has a well-established settlement and poor relief system that is increasingly becoming cash-based as the period progresses, and which does what it can, I suppose, to take care of the most vulnerable in parish communities. Vagrants were often at the very least temporarily excluded from this system simply because of their status as vagrants. You had to have a clear parish of settlement in order to claim relief in it. It's, I think, fascinating to reflect on the enduring fear of vagrancy and what it represents. Certainly, scholars have looked at this. Patricia Fumerton has done a book called Unsettled, and certainly the psychological implications of homelessness in a modern sense have been fairly well studied. But it's not the experience of homelessness itself that caught my attention when I first read the New York Times articles and the New Inquiry piece about homelessness today. What caught my attention was the incredible similarity in attitudes towards the homeless then and now. The fear of association, the fear of, in the case of the Occupy movement, your message being co-opted or your resources being co-opted by people in need. Or if you're the Daily Mail, the anger and disdain at the behaviors that they saw. That has not apparently changed at all. And certainly I would say there is still a troubling strand of effectively racism that surrounds traveler and gypsy communities as well, which is right in order with how they were seen in the early modern period too. So I think perhaps the unsettling conclusion here is that for all of our advancements in the provision of housing and in social welfare and in sort of unemployment benefit and minimum sort of standards of living in our industrialized westernized society, we are still terrified of what it means or what homelessness represents about ourselves, about our economic system, perhaps, about our political system, or our social fabric and its failings. We view the homeless still in a sort of a pitying way as people who have slipped through the cracks, but we still kind of wonder whether or not it was their own fault. And that is exactly the same attitude that early modern commentators had towards the vagrants of their time. They vilified vagrants a lot more than we would certainly vilify the homeless today. It was far more common to punish vagrants than it was to help them. But help was certainly provided. Vagrants were guided back to their parish of settlement when that could be determined, and they were often to be provided for there as what was called the settled poor, in effect given small cash pensions or subsidized housing, very similar to what is done for poor people today, or disadvantaged people today. So the continuities for all of our improvements seem rather unsettling. And I think I'd like to stop there and leave it to you to determine how you feel about our rather depressing lack of progress on this particular issue.